Election Day, November 3rd, is next week, and many important offices are up for grabs, including that of Kentucky's governor. On this week's Eastern Standard, we'll discuss the candidates and how this election season has played out over the past few months. As always, we're interested in your questions or comments before the show. Send them to us at WEKUEasternstandard@gmail.com or leave a message at 859-622-1657 or call in when you tune in for Eastern Standard Thursday morning at 11 on 88.9 WEKU. From the studios of WEKU on the campus of Eastern Kentucky University, this is Eastern Standard. Hello, I'm John Hingsbergen. Election season is almost over, and that is cause for rejoicing for some. Of course, some who are political junkies and love following the process or maybe even the horse race of elections will lament the end of the election season. But what we do know is that after Tuesday night, come Wednesday morning, we're likely to know who the new governor will be, as well as the head of other agencies, the constitutional offices in the Commonwealth of Kentucky. On this week's Eastern Standard, we're discussing the election, and we're interested in interacting with you, our listeners, with your questions, your comments, your stories, your observations about the election process, and we have guests with us to do exactly the same. And first up with me in the studio this morning is Ronnie Ellis, reporter and columnist with CNHI, Community Newspaper Holdings Incorporated, which owns 12 newspapers across the Commonwealth, including the Richmond Register. And Ronnie, welcome back to the WEKU studios.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
Looking forward to a conversation with you and with Benjamin Knoll, assistant professor of politics at Center College in Danville. Benjamin's research focuses on public opinion and voting behavior of the American public. Ben, thank you so much for being with us on the line today.
Yes, absolutely. Thanks for the invitation.
Also with us, Adam Beam, Kentucky State House correspondent for the Associated Press. I don't think that we have met before, Adam, but we're grateful for your participation. And you're joining us by Skype this morning. Is that correct, Adam?
That's right.
All right, not a bad sounding connection, so hopefully we'll be able to interact among ourselves through the use of the technology. Let me kick off our conversation. Well, first of all, let's kick off the conversation by telling listeners that they can interact with us by email, writing to us at WEKUEasternstandard@gmail.com. You can send us a tweet at WEKUEST. That email again, WEKUEasternstandard@gmail.com. And at any time during the program, we have checked the phones, and we believe that you'll be able to get through and talk with us on today's show at 800-621-8890. That's 800-621-8890. But let's start off by talking about what voters will find on their ballot on Tuesday morning, most of which, I guess we've seen TV ads for the races that will be on the ballot on Tuesday. Ronnie Ellis, let's start with you, since the last time we spoke with you, you were excellent in giving us a summary of the races.
Well, all of the constitutional statewide offices, the ones we think of as of state government, governor, attorney general, treasurer, secretary of state, and auditor of public accounts are on. There is a race for the 7th Supreme Court District Justice. And then there are some special elections in a few jurisdictions, a couple of judges. But primarily the election is about those statewide constitutional officers.
So let's go down the list and the list of candidates. Of course, most of our listeners are informed and aware of who the candidates are. But, of course, the governor's race has focused on the Democrat and the Republican. Jack Conway Matt Bevin. And there's also an independent candidate, Drew Curtis.
Drew Curtis is running. He's he's an internet entrepreneur and has developed an aggregator website. He's interjected a lot of humor and candor into the race. I think the press has enjoyed covering him, but he's not running very well in the polls.
Secretary of State's race features an incumbent. The gubernatorial race, by the way, of course, the governor Beshear is open because of term limits.
Correct.
So Secretary of State, Allison Lundergan Grimes is the incumbent, the Democrat, and Stephen Nipper is the Republican.
Yes, he's from Northern Kentucky. He's a former, I believe, city council member in the city of Erlanger. And, of course, she is seeking a second term after having lost the Senate race to Mitch McConnell last fall.
The Attorney General's race, likewise, that is an open seat because that's the seat that's currently held by Mr. Conway.
Correct. Of course, Conway is both term limited and running for another office, running for governor. What's interesting about that race to most people is the outgoing governor's son, Steve Beshear's son, Andrew or Andy Beshear, is running for that office. And opposing him is the Republican state senator who chairs the Judiciary Committee, Whitney Westerfield from Hopkinsville.
Auditor of Public Accounts, or as most people describe it, as the state auditor's position. Adam Edelin, likewise an incumbent, the Democrat. Mike Harmon, the Republican.
Mike Harmon is a state representative from Danville. I think what initially was the interest in this race, and particularly Harmon's entry into it, is Adam Edelin is seen as a rising star in the Democratic Party and has been mentioned as a potential opponent next year for Rand Paul. And at one point, Rand Paul's nephew by marriage, Jesse Benton, was going to manage Mike Harmon's case and said that they were going to weaken Edelin up. But right now, that's Edelin is running for a second term.
State Treasurer, this is an open office as well?
It is. Todd Hollenbeck, the Democratic incumbent, is term limited, having served two terms. You have Rick Nelson from Middlesbrough, a retired teacher and about a 15-year state lawmaker in the House of Representatives, Democrat. He is running against Allison Ball, who's a fresh face and I think probably a rising star in the Republican Party. She is a bankruptcy lawyer from Prestonsburg.
And the Commissioner of Agriculture, again, this is an open seat.
It is. James Comer is the Republican incumbent who ran instead for governor in the Republican primary and lost by 83 votes to Matt Bevin. Ryan Quarles from Georgetown, an attorney and a farmer, a state representative, is running on the Republican ticket. And Jean Marie Lawson Spann, who lives in Union, Kentucky, in northern Kentucky, but originally hails from down around Bowling Green, Barron, and Edmondson County. They own farms in Barron and Edmondson counties. She has an agricultural show. She's running on the Democratic side.
So let's get our other guests involved in the conversation. We've got a general review of what will be on the ballot. These will be on everyone's ballot in the Commonwealth of Kentucky, and the Supreme Court race you're talking about would be in the 7th District.
Basically Eastern Kentucky.
There may be some other local races or issues.
There are some special elections. I know that there is a special judge's election in Jefferson County, and I believe there are a couple of others, but I can't off the top of my head recall what the jurisdictions are.
Let's turn, first of all, to Adam Beam of the Associated Press as the other reporter in our conversation this morning. Anything you'd like to add or any observations you'd like to make on these races based on the summary we've just given there, Adam?
No, that was a pretty good job. You know, I think most of the attention has focused on the governor's race. You know, this is the chief executive of the state. It's an open seat. It's the first open seat we've had in a number of years. For a governor's seat in Kentucky, and you know, it's probably it's probably one of the closest races for governor in the country this year. There's not that many. There's only two others, and because it's an off-year election, and so a lot of people are looking at Kentucky as almost as a bellwether or kind of a preview of the presidential race, just to see, you know, who's got the momentum. If the Republicans can continue their momentum in this state, which they've had from victories in federal elections recently, or if Democrats can continue their hold on state government, which they've had for decades.
Now, there was some research, I guess there's ongoing polling on the governor's race, and there was some research just released yesterday as well about the other constitutional offices. What are the projections? Was that the Kentucky poll?
It was the Bluegrass poll, it's actually conducted by Survey USA for on behalf of the Courier-Journal, the Lexington Herald-Leader, WHAS-TV in Louisville, and WKYT in Lexington. I mean, if you want to go down by the races, Conway is shown to have what we're calling a persistent or a stubborn 5-point lead. That has been there for a while, and it has been duplicated in other polls. pulling away, apparently, according to the Bluegrass poll, a little bit in the Attorney General's race is Andy Beshear over Whitney Westerfield. The last time the Bluegrass poll came out, it was basically even, virtually even, and now I believe Beshear has about a 12-point lead in the Bluegrass poll. Allison Ball is the Republican running for treasurer that we talked about. She has a 2-point lead, which is essentially, given the margin of error, a statistical dead heat. But she's running a very strong race and has a 2-point lead over Rick Nelson. Adam Edlin, who again in the previous poll was in a virtual tie with Mike Harmon in the auditor's race, has begun to edge away. He has such an advantage in terms of finances and been on the television advertising. He's up by, I think, about 8. Quarles, the Republican for the ag commissioner, is leading Jean Marie Lawson Spann 40-33. And then the one who has the biggest lead is Allison Lundergan Grimes, who is running about 50-37 over Steve Nipper. And interestingly, she's the one in the entire group who's reached the magic 50% mark.
And is that any surprise that Grimes would be, seen as so far in the lead following her resounding defeat in the Senate race?
Probably not. She has such wide name recognition. People don't know Mr. Nipper. He's from Northern Kentucky. He has not had a lot of money. He's run an active campaign in the sense that he's traveled making events, but he hasn't been up on the air.
When we come back after our first station break, we want to get some observations from Ben Knoll, a political scientist from Center College. And we're interested in our listeners' comments, your feelings about this election, the race for governor and the other state constitutional offices, the process of the kind of money that's being spent on advertising within the Commonwealth of Kentucky. I would assume that we're breaking records in terms of the amount of money being spent on especially the governor's race?
The governor's race, and then more on the attorney general's race than ever in that race. There's been a lot of money, and as everybody knows and probably sick of, a lot of ads on television.
That's one of the things we're interested in knowing from our listeners of what will cause you to go to the polls, what would cause you to stay away from the polls, and are you happy with the process, with the so-called democratic process of elections in the Commonwealth and elsewhere in our nation? And what does this election say about the next year's presidential race, which it almost feels like we're in the middle of the presidential race, although it is a year away? You're welcome to interact with us now with your question, your comment, your observation at WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com. Send us a tweet at WEKUEST. Or pick up the phone and give us a call. Our guests are Ronnie Ellis of CNHI, Benjamin Knoll of Center College, and Adam Beam, Kentucky State House correspondent for the Associated Press. That phone number, 800-621-8890. That's 800-621-8890. That email, WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com. It's Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. I'm John Hingsbergen. We're talking the 2015 statewide election in the Commonwealth of Kentucky, and you're welcome to be part of the conversation, WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com, or give us a call, 800-621-8890. Our guest for the program in the studio, Ronnie Ellis, reporter, columnist with CNHI, the Community Newspaper Holdings Incorporated, including the Richmond Register. Adam Beam, Kentucky State House correspondent for the Associated Press, and Benjamin Knoll. Dr. Knoll is assistant professor of politics at Center College in Danville. And Ben Knoll, let's come to you and talk about your observations on this election. I know you follow public opinion and voting behavior of the American public. What have you been doing, and more specifically, what are you doing with your classes around this Kentucky election this year?
Oh, sure. We've been doing a lot of things regarding the election here. I am actually this semester I'm teaching a class on interpreting political statistics and political information and looking at each of these gubernatorial polls as they've come out have been really educational opportunities for our students to learn about things like how to interpret margins of error and how confident are we that Conway is leading given the amount of polls that have showed him with that steady lead and stuff like that. We also do here in Boyle County, Danville, where Center College is located, we're doing an exit poll project next Tuesday where we have our students go to the polling locations and they distribute surveys on questions of interest to Boyle County elected officials and voters, and then we compile the information and analyze it and put it out for our community here. So we've got lots of different things going on with the election this year.
Where do you put out that information, the results of your exit polling?
Right. So I put it up on my personal blog within the local paper here. The Advocate Messenger usually runs a story on it, and then anyone who wants it can see it.
All right. Well, let's make sure we know how to look for that. We can pass that along to our political junkies who might be interested in following that. Is that an easy link that you can tell us about, or we need to put that?
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely. I'd be happy to provide you with that.
Let's do it right now.
Okay. If you just go to my personal blog, it's www.informationknoll.com.
Mm-hmm.
And so there'll be something on there by Wednesday morning.
Informationknoll.com.
Yep, just all one word, lowercase.
So, Ben, let's talk. You're talking about margins of error and statistics and so forth. So you've heard the latest Bluegrass poll results. Is that the mm-hmm. last poll before the election, Ronnie? Or is
it's the last that I'm aware of.
Okay.
So publicly released polls, the candidates are polling each day.
I'm sure, polling as we speak. So Ben, what do you think of the polling results? And you mentioned the margin of error for the governor's race, the projected lead of 5% for Mr. Conway. How do you view that?
Right. So two things. One, if you've got a 5% lead, but your margin of error is somewhere around 3%, that suggests that you can't be entirely confident. However, if you've got several polls, like a half a dozen of each showing consistently a 4-5% lead for a particular candidate, your increase in that candidate's confidence of the lead is good. And so at this point, given that the race has been so very consistent pretty much since polling started on this back in January, Conway's had pretty much without fail somewhere between a 3-5% consistent lead. It suggests that lead is real.
And let's say, what about the Secretary of State race, Allison Lundgren Grimes, 50-37%? Is that just a done deal that she's going to be reelected for that?
I mean, you can't ever say for sure in predicting the future, right? But I'd say, barring any unforeseen event that happens in the next couple of days, that difference is well outside the margin of polling error, and she should be fairly confident in the lead that she has there.
Adam Beam, your observations on the Bluegrass poll and the status of the races at this point.
Well, one of the most surprising things to me in the most recent Bluegrass poll was that the Democrat, Jack Conway, I believe this is right, and Ronnie, you can correct me if I'm wrong here, I believe that Jack was leading the Republican, Matt Bevin, in Northern Kentucky. And that's significant to me because, you know, Northern Kentucky, that's really the reason that Matt Bevin is the nominee today and not Jamie Comer. He had very strong support up in that part of the state. And also, that part of the state is represented in the United States Congress by Republican Thomas Massie. And it was just recently announced, I believe a week or two ago, that district, that 4th congressional district, is now, I believe, the first state in, it could be state history, or at least a number of years, that is now a majority Republican district when you look at people that are registered to vote there. So the fact that Jack Conway has a small lead over Matt Bevin in that area, I think, is significant. I think most political observers were looking to that part of the state to be a real area of support for Matt. And, you know, if he's having trouble up there leading Conway, because, you know, he's gonna be behind Conway in the big urban areas, you know, like Louisville and Lexington. I think he was like 32 points down in Louisville. So Matt's really going to have to make that up throughout the rest of the state. And he's hoping to get a lot of votes from that area. And if he's losing to Conway, that could be a troubling sign.
Let's dig in a little bit here on the specific issues. What are the major issues of this gubernatorial race? So certainly the unfunded portion of the pension system is a major concern. Governor Beshear has been at the lead of taking on Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, and establishing a Kentucky Health Exchange, Connect. I understand that you know, there are those who would like to reconsider the state's role in that area. Are those some of the major issues, and what else is out there?
Well, yeah, I think those are the major issues. Underlying it all, of course, is the budgetary situation and the fact that Kentucky has been strapped financially for a number of budget cycles, not only because of the Great Recession, but because of an antiquated tax system. Both members of both parties want to change that tax system, but they can't agree on the method. I think probably what has become the major issues talked about by the candidates are expansion of Medicaid. Interestingly enough, Jack Conway, as we got later and later in the campaign, seemed to embrace that more than he had earlier, which indicated to me, I was thinking about this during the debate on KET the other night, excuse me, that his polling shows that that's more popular perhaps than Mr. Bevin thinks. They've argued over early childhood education. And then, of course, Conway has tried very hard and apparently very successfully, given some of the polling numbers, to make Matt Bevin's consistency or lack of consistency or change of positions and flip-flopping an issue. And those have dominated the news, I think. Those three issues, and pensions. But again, all of it, underlying all of it is our ability to pay for it. When you ask Jack Conway how he's going to pay for increased focus on early childhood education, basically he simply says we have to make tough choices.
Adam, Ben, chime in.
Ronnie, that's a great point. You know, and to me, the Medicaid expansion is probably the most important issue in this race, just for the fact that it has the potential to impact the most people in the shortest amount of time. You know, the pension problem is probably a larger issue financially. You're dealing with a lot more money, and you know the impacts of the pension system, of course, you know, could be catastrophic to the state if it were to fail and the state were to default. But you know, a lot of that is way down the line when those things could happen. But the Medicaid expansion, you're looking at 400,000 people who have health insurance now because of this expansion, many for the first time, and they're wondering now what that their health insurance is going to look like. And it will look drastically different depending on who wins this election. If Jack Conway wins, he's basically said he's going to leave the expansion unchanged. He might make some little changes here or there just based on his policy views, but in the most part, he agrees with Steve Beshear and supports what he's done. Matt Bevin, on the other hand, has indicated several times that he would roll that expansion back or make dramatic changes, such as charging people premiums or making significant benefit changes. So it depends a lot. You know, if you're one of these 400,000 people that are on this have health insurance through Medicaid, this election is very important to you because the future of what your health insurance is going to look like is important. Now, I'm not trying to say that, you know, Bevin's ideas are not without merit. He certainly has a good point in that this is going to cost the state hundreds of millions of dollars, and you know, budget writers already now are trying to figure out how they're going to pay for it. And you know, Matt's stance is we can't afford to continue paying this, so we've got to make some changes.
Now, of course, the governor can't himself take action to make that happen, right? Can the governor roll back that Medicaid expansion?
Yes, it was created by an executive order by Governor Beshear.
Uh-huh.
So now I'm not saying there might not be some challenges to it, but apparently the incoming governor, were he to so choose, could by executive order withdraw as well.
So that really makes that a major issue of who actually is in the governor's seat.
Absolutely.
I agree with Adam. In many ways, this is the issue of the race. It's probably gotten the most attention other than the charge and countercharges between the two. The pension system, as Adam says, is a huge issue, but it's very complicated. It's very complicated for the public to understand or for candidates to talk about in 30 seconds sound bites. And it's not immediate. This will be immediate.
And Ronnie, I got to say, you know, I was surprised that especially the last two debates that we've had, there have been really no issue of social issues, no mention of social issues, no mention of same-sex marriage and Kim Davis in Rowan County. You know, I really thought that Matt Bevin saw an opportunity there and was going to try to make this race about those issues. And it's been silent on that for the past few months, I would say.
Well, and again, as I watched the debate Monday evening, the things that I saw the two candidates doing seemed to me likely to reflect what they were seeing in their polling. And my guess is that is not polling as strongly as perhaps Bevin and others thought it would be. You know, there were some polling the last time around on that issue. And while a majority of people oppose same-sex marriage in this state, it's not as overwhelming as it was when the marriage amendment was passed in 2004. And secondarily, when the question was asked if county clerks should go ahead and perform their duties, then that gap narrowed considerably. And I suspect that that's part of why we're not hearing about it. Again, early in the campaign, Conway would address Medicaid expansion when directly asked, but he rarely brought it up. Now he is. And I think the Bluegrass poll showed that a majority of people do not want it reversed immediately. And I'm sure he's seeing that in his own polling. And Matt Bevin was on the attack in both of the debates last week on the credibility issue, accusing Conway of lying about his record and his character. And I think that probably means that his polling is showing those ads are working. Additionally, and I think there's some additional background in the Bluegrass poll that's just come out, Matt Bevin is underwater in favorable and unfavorability, and Conway is trusted by a greater majority. And I think that goes back to those ads that Conway has run against him and Mitch McConnell ran last spring in the Senate primary.
Now, a neighboring state, Ohio, on its ballot, has legalization of marijuana on the ballot this year. Speaking of social issues, I guess we would consider that to be a social issue. Do we have any sense of where the candidates stand on an issue of this type, which, gosh, when it happens right next door, and I get my understanding is that there seems to be quite a bit of support for that initiative in Ohio. How do we feel that Kentucky might go, and how a gubernatorial, a new governor would react to such a proposal in the Commonwealth?
Well, Conway has said that he, at this point, does not support medical marijuana and certainly not the recreational use of marijuana. You know, the legislature passed a bill two sessions ago to allow the use of oils extracted from hemp and marijuana to treat seizures in children. He supports that. Bevin has said that if a medical marijuana bill were passed by the legislature, he would sign it. And then down in the agriculture commissioner's race, Jean Marie Lawson Spann is also proposing to support the use of medical marijuana if prescribed by a physician, and Quarles opposes that, fearing that it would perhaps muddy the atmosphere and the water for Kentucky's effort to grow industrial hemp and market it. I think in the legislature there is little to no chance for either of those measures at this point, but like a lot of other issues, I think the public sentiment is changing quickly on those, so we're probably not that many years from looking at those sorts of questions.
Ben Knoll, sorry for leaving you out of the conversation in this most recent exchange here. Let's talk about
as you
research and focus on public opinion and voting behavior. For instance, this issue of the Medicaid expansion. What does your work, have you done work that tells us anything about voters' reaction to that Medicaid issue when they plan to go to the polls?
Right. I agree with what Ronnie said earlier, that a lot of these issues that have come up in the election so far in the campaign regarding pension, the budget, Medicaid expansion, the Connect insurance, like a lot of these things aren't issues that most people have like a whole lot of familiarity with. And that's not to say that the public doesn't know anything about any issues. It's just these are highly technical issues that even experts on these spend a lot of time thinking about how to implement and such. And so it's been interesting to me, just given how very serious these issues are, and just like Adam said, the extreme importance of the Medicaid expansion for a number of people here in Kentucky. I guess this is the biggest thing that's surprising me so far with this campaign, is just how little interest that this has been eliciting around the state. I mean, people like us, we're really interested in it, but just in terms of the people I see and in terms of the conversation that's been going on, it seems like there's very few people actively paying attention to this. I'm just thinking anecdotally, and of course this isn't scientific at all, but I just recall 4 years ago when we had the 2011 gubernatorial election, and I talked to this with one of my colleagues, we're just not seeing a lot of excitement. There's very few bumper stickers this time around. There's not as many yard signs. It seems like neither candidate has really been able to get that many people excited about it. And I guess what's worrisome for me then is the prospect that just no one's going to show up this election. Who's going to turn out? And if that's the case, how many people are going to be affected by the decision that's made by the few amount of people that turn out? We might be surprised, but all indications are looking like this will be a very low turnout election.
Really? So, and what factors are going to be considered? Like you know, do we go back to the old adages of weather bringing out, I guess the nice weather brings out Democrats?
Well, I'm looking specifically, if you go back to the 2011 gubernatorial election there, and I consider that one to be a fairly high profile that generated, a good amount of excitement here in the state between Beshear and David Williams. I'm looking at the Secretary of State's website here, only about 29% of registered voters, and that's not even all of the voting eligible public, right? Not even a third of the registered voters in Kentucky showed up to vote for that election. And I don't see this election as getting near as much excitement as that one. So just based on that pattern, that's what I'm basing that prediction on.
I'm going to get Ronnie Ellis to chime in here and Adam Beam as well on voter turnout when we return. And we do want to hear briefly from the candidates. I've got a couple of clips that we pulled from Sunday night's debate that occurred on the campus of Eastern Kentucky University. We'll get to those in the next segment, the final segment of this week's Eastern Standard. Your questions, your comments, your observations are welcome. We do have an email from Mandy that we will acknowledge in a moment. She wrote to us at wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Send us a tweet at WEKUEST or give us a call, 800-621-8890. That's 800-621-8890. This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. The 2015 Kentucky election is our topic on this week's program. Live on Thursday morning, WEKUEasternstandard@gmail.com is our email address, and the phone number, 800-621-8890. You can send us a tweet at WEKUEST. And our guests are Ronnie Ellis, reporter and columnist with Community Newspaper Holdings Incorporated, owning 12 newspapers in the Commonwealth, including the Richmond Register. Ben Knoll, assistant professor of politics at Center College in Danville. Adam Beam, Kentucky State House correspondent for the Associated Press. And talking about this issue of voter turnout, Ronnie Ellis, your observations, what are you thinking?
Well, I think Professor Knoll is correct, and I think the turnout, going back to the poll, you have a consistent 5-point lead for Jack Conway, but you have a 3.5 margin of error, which means that it's at least statistically possible that Bevin could have a slight lead. I don't think that's likely, but we don't know who's going to show up at the polls on Tuesday. There is a remarkable lack of enthusiasm and interest in this race. Throughout the campaign, I have either visited or called around the state to talk to people that I talk to in every election cycle, and I get the same comment. No one's talking about it here. Hmm. We don't hear anybody talking about it, or people are talking about the presidential race, but not the governor's race. If that's the case, and Secretary of State Grimes is predicting a lower turnout than in 2011, if we get down to maybe 25-26% of the vote and the right people show up, it can skew this election regardless of what those polls are saying. And the places where I have seen the greatest energy among the electorate in this fall has been among the evangelicals, who are upset about the same-sex marriage, and the Tea Party, which identifies somewhat with Bevin. And so it is at least it would be something if I were running the Conway campaign I'd be on the lookout for. I'd want to make sure I got my vote out in places like Louisville and Fayette County and other Democratic strongholds. And there are, and at this point in 2011, I think there were 27,000 absentee ballots requested or cast. As of yesterday, there were only 14,000. So this could be a historically low turnout election.
Adam Beam, any observations on the issue of voter turnout?
Well, I think a low turnout would help Jack Conway, simply because I think Jack has a better campaign.
Ronnie disagrees with you. He's not. He's shaking his head no.
I think Jack has a better campaign organization in place than Matt Bevin. I think he would be more able to turn out the people that are for him, his team, so to speak. I think Matt Bevin would benefit greater if more people showed up, because they might not have been paying attention or being as in tune to the election as some of the people that have been following it more closely, and they might be more willing to vote for, you know, or just to vote Republican because that's how they feel, how they identify with. And so, you know, I haven't really heard Jack Conway talk a lot about, you know, the campaign talk a lot about trying to get people out to vote. Matt Bevin talks about it all the time. I was at an event in Bowling Green, and Matt started talking about how his service as a military veteran, and he started crying. He was tearing up, saying that, you know, I served with men who are dead, and yet so many of us don't get out and vote, and everybody should get out and vote. And so it just looks to me that would more benefit him if more people came out to vote. But I'm interested to hear what Ronnie has to say.
Well,
Go ahead, Doctor.
Sure, Ben.
Yeah, just so if I'm looking at this from my political science perspective, one of the key predictors of voter turnout in the United States is socioeconomic status, those who are older, those who are higher income, more educated, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm looking at the cross tabulations from the Big Red poll that WKU ran a couple of weeks ago in October. And from here, it's showing that amongst the 65-plus age group, that Conway's leading 58% to 30% there. And amongst those with incomes over $100,000 a year, Conway's got a 53% to 41% advantage, it looks like. So in low turnout elections, it tends to be the types who vote very consistently who are the ones who show up, meaning those who are older, those who are higher income, et cetera, et cetera. And if that's the case, that's one piece of evidence that would suggest an advantage for Conway with a low turnout. But there are other factors that could also suggest otherwise.
And that's where some things like weather come into play. If it's a really nice day and people, oh, great day, I'll go out and vote. But if it's a nasty, nasty day and they'd rather stay home, the less motivated voter is the one that's going to stay home.
Yeah, and I think all of the points that each of the other guests have made are correct. But if you bore down in some of the information in the Bluegrass poll on a percentage basis, Bevin does less well among his own party than Conway does. I don't think there's any question that there is resentment in that party over Bevin's failure to endorse Mitch McConnell after having challenged Mitch McConnell last year. He runs as an outsider within his own party. So those folks who would normally be expected to go to the polls on the Republican side lack reasons to do it this year. And, you know, Conway does not inspire enthusiasm among the Democrats who don't think he's a good campaigner. I suspect that the Conway people, to some degree, agree with Adam that a low turnout is to their advantage because of the type of campaign they've run. They've been out there meeting and greeting and shaking hands and slapping people on the back less than any Democratic ticket I can ever remember. My reasoning in this is that if the West End of Louisville and Jefferson County don't turn out in sizable numbers for Conway, if he cannot win traditional counties like Pike or Floyd, traditional Democratic counties that Republicans have been winning in federal elections, and those evangelicals and Tea Party groups who are anxious to go vote, they are excited. If they show up and it's a 25% election, I think Conway could be in trouble with a 5-point lead.
800-621-8890. Still a few minutes, maybe 10 minutes remaining in this week's Eastern Standard. 800-621-8890. our email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Let me acknowledge an email that we did receive earlier in the program. This is from Mandy, who wrote, I vote with the unions, so there's no question I'll vote for Jack Conway. However, the level of mudslinging in this campaign may have hurt Conway more than helping him. My father and others I know who would generally support Democrats are so disgusted with the negativity in this race, they are considering staying home.
Well, and that's another reason for the low turnout. Negative ads work. We all say we don't like them, but there's a reason that candidates continue to use them is because they work. But one of the things they do is while they knock down the favorability ratings of your opponent, they don't do anything to raise your own, and they tend to depress turnout.
We did have a call from Adam that I want to acknowledge, but apparently Adam doesn't want to go on the air. Hope your bronchitis is doing better, Adam. But Adam wants to know how much the general public realizes the governor can rescind the Medicaid expansion single-handedly. He was unaware that it was even enacted on executive order, which puts him in the same position that I was in earlier in the program. That's what we were talking about here. The governor, whoever is elected, will either decide to continue the Medicaid expansion that Mr. Beshear put in place, or could, with a pen stroke, rescind it?
Apparently, he can do that. Kentucky may be a little bit different than other states. Governor Beshear relied upon a law passed by the legislature in the past, several years, that gives him the authority to make decisions which can capitalize on federal Medicaid and dollars available to the state, and he utilized that to do so. The Republican Senate and Republican members of the House contested his ability to do that, but it stood the test, and consequently a governor could withdraw it. And Governor Beshear has even said, if we get down the road and this becomes too expensive, we're free to withdraw. So yes, by all accounts, he can do it.
800-621-8890. If you'd like to get on board, give us a shout. That's 800-621-8890. Ben Knoll.
Oh, I was going to say, just to get back to the question, in terms of how many Kentuckians are familiar with the issue at that level of detail to realize just what the Medicaid expansion is, how it's related to the Affordable Care Act, and how exactly what part of government is responsible for implementing it. I haven't seen any hard data on that, but just based on everything else we know about the types of people who tend to know versus not know things about the level of detail in government, I guess it's a very small percentage of the Kentucky voters who understand the issue with that degree of detail.
Well, and you know, if you poll whether people like Connect, you'll get one response. If you poll whether people like Obamacare, then you get a different response. So, you know, people don't understand the complexity of the law and how one section of the law may have impact or affect another if you do one and don't do the other.
Let's go to the phone and talk to Don from Lexington. Don, thank you for calling and being part of this week's Eastern Standard. Go right ahead.
Yes. Why has there never or ever been any interest in instant runoff voting to prevent the spoiler effect, as well as clean up elections in terms of the negativity?
So runoff voting, you're saying, say you have three candidates, get it down to two, and then have a runoff of the two?
No. Instant runoff voting allows for everybody, when they go into the voting booth, to select the candidates in their choice that they would wish. And therefore, if there is a spoiler effect, that is, nobody gets the majority, the third-place candidates votes would be counted for their second place choice, and therefore the one of the two candidates above them would get the 50% majority.
Right.
And that would give a clear winner, as well as the candidates would probably not attack each other for the simple reason of not wanting to alienate the third place votes. Third place candidates' votes.
Very interesting. Don, thank you for raising that question. We're going to get a reaction from our panelists. Ben Knoll, as the academic, what about this kind of voting process? Is that even doable within our current system?
Oh, sure. Yeah. No, it's absolutely doable. Just like was described, the cool thing about it is when you go into the ballot box, instead of just picking one person, just like was said, instead you rank, like, what's your top three, and you indicate, this would be my first preference, this would be my second, this would be my third preference. And then if your first preference doesn't win, just like I said, then your second preference would then go for that vote, and they just keep calculating the numbers until the top two remain, and then whoever gets the majority then gets them plus and wins with the majority.
Is that used anywhere? Where is that kind of an approach being used?
No, that's being used in some municipal places around the country. I think there's some places in Oregon. A few different countries use these, actually. These are used in New Zealand to some places. I know San Francisco just tried it out. I think some places in Minnesota as well. It's also called instant runoff voting, if anyone's ever heard of that. All it basically takes is for a city or a state just to pass a law. I mean, the state can control how it runs its elections, and there's nothing in the Constitution saying that we have to do it exactly the way we're doing it, which is a plurality vote. So we could, if any state would just like to start implementing it, that would not be a difficult thing to do.
800-621-8890. This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. We're talking the election on this week's program. Our show live on Thursday morning, so there's still a little time for you to get involved at 800-621-8890. I think I will take a moment right now just to forward promote the fact that on election night here at WEKU, we will be going essentially wall-to-wall following the world at 8 o'clock. We have NPR's All Things Considered on the air until 7, and we have The World from Public Radio International and the BBC until 8. And then at 8 o'clock, what we're going to do is we're going to continue with NPR's All Things Considered and intersperse Kentucky election information with the national broadcast of NPR's All Things Considered. And, of course, other elections that will be underway will be covered within All Things Considered that evening as well. So we encourage you to tune in to WEKU for that coverage. We'll have updates from our Kentucky Public Radio partners at the stations elsewhere in the state, including our State House Bureau based out of Frankfort, reports out of Louisville, reports out of Murray and Bowling Green, as well as from WEKU. All right, folks, Adam Beam, let's talk about what to be looking forward to on Tuesday night. First of all, where will you be, Adam? Where will you be observing this process from? What indicators are you looking for on Tuesday night to know the outcome of the election?
Well, we're still trying to figure that out, but I think I'm going to be with Attorney General Conway at the Frankfort Convention Center, watching the returns there. And, you know, we'll just be looking primarily to see how much of an advantage either candidate would have as soon as the early precincts come in. Those usually give you a good indicator of who's going to be have the momentum going forward that night. And, I'm grateful to work for the Associated Press, which has a very sophisticated system in place where we have professional race callers who vet the results, evaluate, and make those decisions elsewhere. And so I just kind of go by what they say and write the story based on when they feel like they have enough information to call the race.
Let me quickly get Stuart from Lawrenceburg on the air here, and then we'll follow up with Ben.
Yes.
And Ronnie, in terms of where they'll be on election night. Yes, Stuart, thanks for calling. Go right ahead.
Yes. When the economy busted, you know, I kind of get in with my health insurance and stuff. Well, I fell into a category where I was able, because of having four herniated discs, to get insurance to actually help my back surgery, which is then and 10, allowed me to be able to pay more taxes back again and get out of that category. What I see is, why don't they turn around, instead of just wiping the pen and wiping this out, put it into phases of stages, like according to what you pay, you might pay $75 a month or $50 a month for your insurance, you know, at different levels of your income, instead of just wiping it out. And, you know, I know it's not politically correct, but this puts people back to work to be able to pay taxes if they have this help.
So, Stuart, we're close on time here, but so you're a beneficiary of the expansion of Medicaid. That helped your situation.
It helped me be able to get back surgery, which be able to help me get back out and be able to make more income more taxes.
And what does that do to you on Tuesday? How does that cause you to plan to vote on Tuesday?
Well, you you know, Bevin scared me in a way because he's talking about swiping it off. But then again, you know, I don't know where Conway truthfully stands. You don't anymore know truthfully what any of them stands for, unfortunately. You know, but I guess I will may end up going with Conway just because Bevins has scared me saying he's going to totally wipe it out, you know.
All right, Stuart, I'm sorry for we having to limit your time, but thank you so much for participating. Very good observation on your part and certainly an insight into the possible direction those who benefited from the Medicaid expansion may go.
It's an unfairness to Bevin, since we've talked about his ability to wipe it out and some statements. He has, in fact, said he would like to seek a waiver to do something along the lines of what the gentleman was talking about.
To keep it in phase in some, mm-hmm. some form. Ronnie Ellis, on election night, where will you be?
I will either be in Frankfurt at the convention center or probably working from my desk as a one-man operation, but I will be following both sides.
And what are you looking at, and when will you know that it's all over?
Well, I don't know that it could be late. I will initially be looking. Those early returns tend to be from Fayette County, so Conway should lead early. I'll be looking at counties like Floyd and Pike to see if he wins those and wins them by any significant margin. Northern Kentucky, and then if it's tight, we'll be watching Western Kentucky late in the evening.
Ben Knoll, are you watching with students? What do you have going on Tuesday night?
Yeah, we'll just be here in Danville. We will be, at that time that the results are coming in, we'll be in a computer lab furiously entering the results from our exit poll surveys and compiling those and analyzing them. And we'll have the TV on watching the returns as they come in.
What's that web again, or your blog address?
Yeah, sure. For those who are interested, it's www.informationknoll. That's all one word, lowercase, K-N-O-L-L.
K-N-O-L-L. Ben Knoll of Center College, thank you so much for being with us. Ronnie Ellis of CNHI and Adam Beam of the Associated Press. This program was produced by Noah Day. We've had assistance from Logan Riley and from Andrew Moorhead. Brian Bartlett at the controls. This is Eastern Standard. I'm John Hingsbergen. Thanks for tuning in.